Hello, and welcome to the Podcast Motor Show. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt. Here each week, we're going to bring on the best and brightest minds from podcasting for them to share exactly what's working with their shows right now. We're going to show you how to grow your listenership, build your online brand, and engage with your community more effectively. All right, let's jump into the show. All right, today on the show, we have Rob Berger from the Dough Roller Money Podcast. Rob, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on your show.
No, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. You know, I've said it before, one of my favorite parts of doing the Podcast Motor Show is having different types of podcasters on to talk about how they're using podcasting for their brand and for their marketing and connecting with their audience. And I think your story probably will be one of the more interesting that we've done recently. But for folks who don't know you and kind of what your show is about, would you mind giving us kind of your Superman Genesis story?
Hey, sure. I started the blog, doughroller.net, actually 10 years ago this month.
Wow. Just
as sort of a hobby. I was practicing law, and I was bored. My wife said, get a hobby. And so I started blogging about personal finance and investing. And, 10 years later, it's a full-time business. I've retired from practice of law last year. I'm 50. And 3 years ago, I started a podcast. I didn't do any sort of business plan or projections. I didn't really monetize it, but I thought it would be fun to do. And so three and a half years ago, I started a podcast, obviously related to personal finance and investing. And I've been producing at least one show a week and sometimes five a week, just depends on my mood, for 3.5 years. So yeah. That's my story in 60 seconds.
So 270 episodes into it now that's pretty amazing. We have kind of gone in seasons here with the Podcast Motor Show. We go for, a dozen or so episodes, take some time off and get kind of our strategy back for the next season or so. My own personal podcast has 90 episodes now in it, but you have, three times as many episodes. Honestly, how do you do it? And I mean, around the topic of money and personal finance, there's an infinite number of things to talk about. But can you talk just a little bit about your cadence and your, I'll say stamina for lack of a better word, I guess, but your ability to put out content on such a regular and high frequency basis?
Sure. In terms of topics, they're limitless, right? I mean, so I have guests on the show, like obviously you do, and that's been a lot of fun. I've gotten to meet a lot of different people in the personal finance and investing world, authors and, folks from companies and, so that's been one sort of type of show. And then there are just important topics, whether it's about how to budget or how to invest or credit or whatever. And so that's a good chunk of the shows. And then I get tons and tons. The big surprise for me when I started the podcast was the connection that I have with the people that listen to it. I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe I wasn't expecting anything, but I've literally received thousands of emails. And so at one point I just thought I'd start a Facebook group. And I'm thinking, it'll be embarrassing if I mention it and five people join it. But there's like 2,200 people now in this Facebook group. And so those, the comments in that group and the emails I get, those are questions that often form topics for the show. I'll have shows dedicated just to answering questions I've received. And that's given me sort of an endless pipeline of topics. And then, it doesn't take long to produce a podcast, at least the way I produce it. So, I can literally hit record on GarageBand within an hour, maybe two, have a podcast published.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you talk a little more about your process for recording and editing then?
I can. Process would probably be giving it two more credit than it deserves. So I record in GarageBand. And if I'm doing an interview like this, I do it over Skype and just record it in Skype. Mm-hmm. And I don't do any – I literally do zero post-production editing. Occasionally, if there's an issue with the person I'm interviewing's sound, I'll level the sound. That's it. I don't – I used to have, but I don't have any intro music, outro music. I literally just hit record and I start talking. And when I'm done, I don't edit out the mistakes. I don't edit out the ums and all of that. I just save it and convert it to an MP3, add the tags, and upload it to – I use Libsyn at the moment. That may change. And I use Libsyn Feed so that I don't even have to include show notes in my blog. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll embed a podcast in a post I might have written 3 years ago because it's, you know, relevant.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, if you use, say, SoundCloud, they have a very nice player you can embed. And I might embed that in five different posts if it's relevant. And yeah, that's it. So it's pretty bare bones, but I don't have complaints from folks about the quality of the sound. I do have a good microphone, but people don't, you know, maybe they're just being nice. I don't know, but I haven't received complaints. And actually, in terms of the intro and outro kind of thing, which I think it's fine. I think those can be great. A lot of podcasters use them, but I've had a lot of people email me and say, I'm so glad you don't do that because I listen to your podcast every week. And frankly, I'd get tired of hearing the intro and outro every single week.
Yeah.
So it's pretty bare bones operation, but it works.
So, gosh, there's a ton to unwrap there. I guess, first of all, and this is a little selfish, but talk about, you said potentially moving away from Libsyn. I know that, I mean, we have historically recommended Libsyn to all of our customers at Podcast Motor just because I make the analogy, they're the Amazon Web Services of the podcast hosting world. We are building our own solution to podcast hosting that is very tightly integrated into WordPress via a plugin we acquired in December. And so it will be sort of similar to the PowerPress and Blueberry analogy of podcast hosting, where you can do all of your production and publishing of your podcast from WordPress, and then the files are hosted, you know, on a third party kind of dedicated media hosting platform. But talk about why you might be moving from Libsyn, because I think this is an interesting thing that I think we might be seeing more of soon.
Yeah, so I love Libsyn. I've used them from the start of the show. I have absolutely no complaints. They're very, I think their cost is very reasonable and it works, right? So I've got I would highly recommend Libsyn. Mm-hmm. However, the reason I might be moving away is because really for the first time, I'm going to start taking advertising on the show. And I might be using an agency that requires a different hosting service.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And there are things that you can do with other hosting services like dynamic insertion ads. So, for example, you wouldn't hard code an ad into the podcast. You would create a separate, whatever, 30-second spot, let's say, and they can dynamically insert it not only to, you know, your current podcast, but they can go back in time and insert them into all of the podcasts you've recorded that still get some downloads. And when that advertiser, let's say, leaves, you know, you want to change advertisers, it's easy to swap them out with someone else. So I don't know if Libsyn can do that, but at least the service that I'm going to go with requires a different hosting company. And I'll tell you, it's about 10 times more expensive.
Hmm. Interesting. You probably can't share the name of the service, the advertising service you're going to, or the hosting platform that they would require?
Sure. Wondery is the advertising company. I think probably more people are probably familiar with Midroll.
Mm-hmm.
Same, but it's the same concept. And they use Art19 for hosting.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, I've heard of Art19 for sure. And I know their sort of dynamic ad insertion tool. Sounds really interesting. So that's something to be a first foray into advertising for your show. Do you have any concerns about the alignment of your advertisers with your message and your audience that kind of a program?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a concern, but I would say that I have the right to refuse any advertiser, and I will exercise that liberally if I think I need to. In my case, the kinds of advertisers that Wondery has at the moment that might be relevant to my show are perfectly fine.
Mm.
The one thing that I preach on my show is the importance of keeping your investing costs low. Expense ratio, not to get into all the details, I know it's not a personal finance podcast, but keeping the expense ratios of your mutual funds low, which usually means index funds. And if you're paying an advisor, I mean, a 1% advisor fee over a lifetime investing will just crush your wealth. And so I wouldn't want to advertise an investment advisor that's charging a 1.5% fee, right?
Sure.
It would just be totally contrary to everything I believe. But I don't really think that's going to be an issue. And if one wanted to advertise, I'd just say no, that's all.
Yeah.
It is important to control that message if others are thinking about advertising. And so you don't want to give up your right to say no ever.
Yeah. I know that's a big, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd say Wondery does not, you know, they get, you have absolute ability to veto any advertiser.
Gotcha. Interesting. I know that's a big concern people have when they're just starting out with advertising is, you know, what is my audience going to think if I start advertising FreshBooks, right? That's like one of the bigger acuity scheduling or something that might not kind of align with them and their message and what their audience has come to expect. But the fact that you have some level of control, it sounds like pretty fine-grained control over that, is pretty neat. So
yeah,
that's great. I'll be anxious to see how that turns out for you. I think that's great.
Yeah, I'll be anxious to see too.
I bet. And is this the first time you've kind of directly monetized your podcast then?
Not the first time, but as a practical matter, yes. I did a 30-day or 31-day span in January of 2014 where I did a podcast every day for the month as a way to kind of kickstart the year and get people focused on finances. And I had a couple of advertisers for that 31-day piece that I went out and got on my own, hard-coded the ads right into the podcast, you know, because that's all I could do. And but other than that, I've gone 3.5 years other than that 1 month or so without advertising. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think this idea of this dynamic ad insertion is really interesting. I think it's kind of like AdWords for podcasting. And yeah, honestly, for me, the jury is a little still out on how well it will work out for kind of mass media, I guess, in mass consumption. The thing I like about it is it removes that huge barrier that you went through in 2014, where you said, I have to go out and get all these people and I have to insert them into the podcast episodes and I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to do the other. Whereas you could sign up for Wondery and use Art19 or Midroll and just say, okay, here you go. And maybe have a little less control over exactly who you have for which episode and things like that. But the ability for everyone to get involved in this is much, much more attainable, I think, versus the very manual way that podcast advertising has been done up until now or up until people using these platforms more.
Yeah, for me, I just couldn't spend the time trying to get, you know, get advertisers. It just wouldn't work.
Sure.
So I have to, you know, I have to use a service, and that's fine. I mean, it makes it convenient for me. Obviously, there's a rev share. So, but you know, they ought to get paid for bringing the advertisers to me. So that's fair.
Sure. Just sort of generally, and again, this is maybe totally selfish, but just generally, maybe in terms of like a percent of what you might expect in terms of advertising, if you were doing this by yourself, do you have any feel for what your revenue potential would be using this kind of service versus doing it yourself, like half or three quarters as much as you could make on your own, you think?
Well, I think I would make less on my own, and the reason is because I wouldn't put in the time and effort to track down the advertisers.
Okay.
So in other words, you know, having been in this business for 10 years, I know a lot of folks at a lot of fintech companies, right? Whether it's, you know, like folks like Betterment or Wealthfront. I don't know if your listeners get into personal finance, but I have great contacts at Vanguard and T. Rowe Price and anyway. But to sit and email them, call them one after another and try to get advertisers, I would probably give up before I could fill my ad space, right? And then as soon as I got it filled and they advertised for 2 or 3 months and felt they got their money's worth and were going to move on, then I'd have to go do it all over again, right? You know, I can tell you that what I've seen is that for, say, a pre-roll or mid-roll spot, say 30 to 60 seconds, you're basically looking at a CPM of about $25. Mm-hmm. And the agencies want you to put as many ads on your podcast as you think you can. And so they might do one pre-roll and 4 mid-rolls. So that's 125 CPM, but you're also hitting your audience with 5 advertisements.
Sure.
So I'm not going to go to that extreme. And I haven't figured out exactly where I'm going to draw the line. That may be some trial and error. But yeah, that's kind of just, you know, what I've seen. I don't know if you probably have your finger on the pulse of this more than I do. But that's what I've seen talking to other podcasters primarily.
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty in line with what we hear. And I think that the important thing there is for podcasters who are just getting into any sort of advertising on their show is really being conscious of, like you said, hitting your audience with so many messages. And if you're going to do it manually, really picking that first advertiser very carefully and having that be something kind of special for your audience. And if you're going to use something like ART19 or mid-roll to maybe be on the cautious side of those controls they give you. But the thing I like about these dynamic programs is you can change it over time and it will go back to those old episodes. Whereas, I mean, you would have a hell of a time swapping out a 30-second roll 20 episodes ago.
That really, it wouldn't be workable.
So it just sort of coincidentally, as an aside, the thing that I've heard from other people just getting into advertising that I think sounds to work really well is similar to what you did for your kind of month of podcasting a couple of years ago, is selling a book of spots. So a month or 8 episodes worth or something like that, so that everybody can get kind of familiar with each other as a business relationship. So you sell, 8 weeks worth of episodes, and you maybe give them a discount or something like that over the per price CPM or per episode CPM. And I think that's a nice way for the advertiser, the company that's going to be advertising on your show, to feel comfortable about being kind of an established, recognizable brand on your podcast. And for you to have all of your work be really worth it, because you don't have to go get somebody else next week also, right?
Right, right. So. Yeah, I mean, it worked out for me. I just didn't keep up with it.
Sure.
Which sounds kind of strange. Why would you do a podcast for 3.5 years and basically make no money from it? But I don't know. I enjoyed doing it. And the websites make enough. So it was fine. But, again, I've gotten to the point now where it makes sense to try to monetize it with something.
Gotcha. Neat. So, kind of stepping back a little bit, how does the podcast fit in with the rest of the content and marketing that you do for Dough Roller?
That's a great question. And frankly, not very well, oddly enough. The blogs, and I own several, doughroller.net's the main one, but they're all in the personal finance investing space, and they make money primarily from affiliate income and some display ads. And so for a long time, I would simply try to incorporate the show notes of a podcast, into the blog, and it may not have anything to do with any affiliate income. That's fine. But, hopefully it's good content and can help people. And that's kind of how it was integrated. And that was the extent of it. And I didn't think that was very effective, which is one of the reasons I moved away from generating the feed myself. I now have Libsyn generate the feed so that I can publish shows without show notes if I want to, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the reason I say that it's not integrated very well, there's a couple of things. One is, I really, as I mentioned, I do this some, but I don't do it enough. For each show, I ought to embed a player in every single article where it's relevant. And, since we've been doing this 10 years, between about 4 different sites, I've probably got 10,000 articles. And so, you could embed, I could go back over those 200 and however many episodes and probably embed a lot of the podcasts into some relevant articles and increase my downloads and everything else. And I just haven't done that. And I need to. That's probably something I'll get some help with. That's one thing. The other thing is I contribute to Forbes, and that's been really good. But I don't really have any connection between Forbes and the podcast to speak of. And that's something that I'm trying to change. I put out a newsletter, a free newsletter. It goes to about 25 or 30,000 people every week. And it's going to sound crazy. I don't link to the podcasts, and there's no real reason why I don't. I just haven't, and that's something that I'm changing. And then lastly, and this may have been more, Craig, than you were looking for, but I don't have my own products, right? So I don't have a book, for example. I'm working on one. What blogger is not, right? But nice. I've been working on it forever. But I think the podcast would be a great way to market that kind of thing. And it's obviously something that I haven't done yet, and I plan to cross that off my to-do list this year as well. So I think there's a lot of value in the podcast. I just haven't been tapping that value.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that you're in the same boat that a lot of people are in, where they have all of this content and all sorts of different types of content. And sometimes it's really tough to figure out how they work well together. And then the actual nuts and bolts of doing it and being intentional about it and being thoughtful and having a purpose for every piece of content you create. I'll say for myself, it's impossible. Sometimes, our blog and our podcast and our emails and our Facebook group, oftentimes they all have to do with podcasting, sure enough. And we really cater to businesses and online personalities like yourself, just because those are the people who are podcasting most of the time and have some sort of business sense about their podcast. But tying it all together, I think for the people who do it really well, and you're probably not giving yourself enough credit for how you tie your message together across all those different medium. But I think that's the real kind of secret sauce, is that somebody who listens to your podcast and reads your blog and sees you on Forbes and reads your emails, they hear kind of the same things. And so they've built the trust with you over that time. So this is a kind of a bizarre question, I guess, and this is hope not leading, and you can answer it no if you'd like. Do you feel that if you had a service like Podcast Motor that was doing some of the work for you and creating some of that content, that you would be able to focus on the strategy of your content more? And if so, do you think that would be helpful?
Well, that's a good question. Part of it depends on what the service is, right? So, for example, could you improve the quality of the sound? Maybe, I don't know. I mean, my ear, the sound is pretty good, but I'm not a professional. And so maybe you could. I don't know how that would impact the bottom line.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, where a type of service could be helpful is in creating content off of the podcasts. Now, what I didn't say was create show notes, right? Because, and that, I have a real problem with, by the way, I've not seen the kind of show notes you guys create, but a lot of the show notes that I've seen historically are short articles with, you know, maybe an intro paragraph and bullet points about what was discussed and maybe bullet points with resources mentioned kind of thing. In my case, let's say I'm responding to three personal finance or investing questions from listeners, right? And it's an hour show and I give each question 20 minutes time and give as thorough a reply as I can. Well, that has the potential to turn into three articles, right?
Mm-hmm.
That might, you know, I might publish one on Forbes, I might publish one on doorroller.net, I might publish one on one of my other sites or whatever. Having someone take the audio and create those three pieces for me that required very little editing on my part, that would be hugely valuable. And in fact, I could see going back to old podcasts and doing that. Now, at one point, I'd set that up internally with some of the people that work with me, and we kind of moved away from it. I just didn't think it was effective. But I think with the right systems in place and the right people to do it, that kind of thing could be very helpful. I don't know if that's exactly the kind of stuff you do. My podcast may be not the norm in some respects. That could be helpful to me.
Yeah.
You know, I know you guys do transcriptions. I have a person that transcribes. Right now, the only thing I transcribe are interviews.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I don't know. You tell me. How could your services help me?
Yeah. So I think that the dirty secret maybe of podcasting, and it sounds like you know this, is there is a certain line above which the quality of your audio doesn't matter very much, right? And it is. Right now, you and I, like, we have good volume levels and it's not a really noisy environment. My kids are in the background a little bit, right? But it's not like crazy. This is fine, right? And no one's going to turn your podcast off because of this. If you're below that, then spending some time on your audio setup probably will get you to that bar that you have to be above. And then a little bit of post-production to clean things up really helps. I think above that, there is an incremental benefit to your podcast if you get into kind of the NPR style of show where it's really interesting and dynamic. But the fact is, I listen to some podcasts that are poorly edited and put together because the content is so good. So that's the key, I think, is if you can record decently and have really good content, then your podcast will be successful. Having a great sounding podcast isn't going to overcome bad content. So the place we kind of hang our hat is we do the hard work of the audio editing, the show note writing, and the transcription, so you can focus on making better content, because that's really what's going to drive your podcast. But the thing you touched on that I think is really powerful, and the place that I think people fall short, is repurposing their content. So transcription is kind of a form of repurposing content. Something that more of our customers are doing now is doing video recordings of their podcast so that they publish it to something like YouTube or Facebook Live. and on their blog, and it's a podcast, and they have a transcription. So then you have like six or seven different places that you're putting that 30 minutes of effort. And I think if you can start doing that really well, and you have systems or a service like Podcast Motor do some or all of that for you, then your input is amplified greatly in the end result. So yeah, I mean, I think your point about show notes is very fair, that the cookie cutter, you know, hey, today Craig and Rob are going to talk about XYZ, is maybe not super helpful. I do think there's something to be said for just the sheer amount of content that podcasting creates, in terms of if you have show notes with each episode, it's another blog post on your site, and it's another way for people to find you. And if you do SEO well, you could really get that long tail keyword bank rolling for you. But yeah, I think repurposing content is the real kind of secret. And if you can do things like video and transcription, then the digital footprint that your podcast makes starts getting really big.
Yeah, two comments there. So I recently had an assistant upload virtually all of my podcasts to YouTube. Now there's no video, right? So mm-hmm. It's just a little splash screen with, you know, the name of each episode. That's it. And they just did this over the last 2 months. And before then, I'd virtually had absolutely no use for YouTube at all in terms of my blog. And I'm looking at the stats now. I've got 500 subscribers or almost, and about 45,000 views. Now, you know, and that was all for paying someone a couple hundred bucks. Now, that doesn't really translate into a lot of money at the moment.
Right.
At least not in terms of YouTube ads. You know, and I'm not like the most popular person on YouTube, and I'm sure I never will be. But 45,000 views is nothing to sneeze at, and that's all in a couple of months. So I absolutely agree. And of course, if I could add video, maybe just record myself even doing the podcast. I mean, this is where you could put a lot of effort into it. A lot of what I do on the show, talking about finance, I'm often looking at my computer screen, whether it's a spreadsheet or something about the stock market or whatever. And, you know, if I wanted to get fancy, I could use screen capture software and incorporate that into a YouTube video that I think would be very helpful. So I think, you know, I'm really just scratching the surface, but, you know, with relatively little effort, it's, I think, had decent results in terms of getting my, you know, the information out there to folks. The second thing I'll mention, I think if there was one thing I would do differently if I were starting over, is I would decide on a format for the show. And I would stick to it.
Mm.
My shows, you know, there's, you know, all kinds of formats. I interview people. Sometimes I don't. I have, you know, I answer three or four questions, or I'll answer one, or I'll answer none. I'll have one topic. I'm kind of all over the place. Now, part of that was by design, because I didn't want to lock myself into one format. But it's something that when I move to advertising, I'm going to have to change. And frankly, I should change it. So I would highly recommend that, you know, for folks thinking about this, or even having started a podcast, come up with a format that you think works for the show and then stick with it. I wish I would have done that from the start.
Interesting. What makes you think that? Have you gotten feedback from your listeners, or you sort of intuitively know that some of your episodes just don't resonate as much with them, or what is it about the desire to have more kind of structure around your format?
You know, I think it's more intuitive. I haven't gotten complaints. By the way, if you ask folks, do you want a short podcast, 15 minutes, let's say, or you want a long one, an hour, it's about a 50-50, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that you really can't, you know, people are big into surveying their audience, and I guess there's maybe a place for it. But by and large, you know, on any issue, you're going to get answers from both perspectives.
Sure.
And so so I think it's more intuitive. But I think people get comfortable when they know what to expect. And when I look at the really popular podcasts run by just regular folks, right? Not NPR, but you know, the ones that I see that are do well, they have a consistent format. And frankly, sometimes I don't like the format personally, or I think their style is kind of goofy in a way. Although who knows, they probably listen to me and think I'm goofy, but you know, But you know, you come to expect, you know, this format that they've got, even a format to interviewing. And I think that's effective. You know, some people might disagree with me. I don't have data to back it up. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But that's my instinct, is that I'd rather have a format that I followed each week.
Gotcha. Gotcha. No, I think there's a ton to that. I think that consistency from an audience perspective is huge. You know, it's the format, and you or you and your co-host or you and a guest and the same day and the same time every week and the same type of structure and message. Because so people know what to expect, right? They come and listen to the Dough Roller podcast, and they know they're going to get X, Y, and Z. And you can have a little variety. But I think there's definitely something to that. Yeah,
consistency, you mentioned that. That's the right word.
Yeah.
Consistency, both of frequency of podcast, length, content. You know, not that they have to be cookie cutter week in and week out, but consistency. Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah, neat. You know, Rob, we'd like to leave with something that could really benefit a new podcaster. You know, thinking back 270 episodes ago, aside from the format, what kind of knowledge and insights could you share with someone who's just getting into podcasting that they could really kind of take and run with?
Well, I would say that, so when I started this, I already had a platform, right? I had a blog that was getting, you know, a lot of traffic. So I had an advantage that a lot of podcasters just starting out might not have. And so the one thing, and I got away from this, but the one thing that I would recommend for a couple of reasons is doing interviews. And I know that's pretty common for podcasts, although not all podcasters do them, and you might not do them every single episode. But I did a lot of interviews starting out and then moved away from it for probably a year, and I'm only now getting back to it. The reason it's important is, well, I mean, first of all, I think it's just fun, you know, to get to meet new people and get their perspectives. And I think it can make for an interesting, more interesting show. But the real, a real key to it is it'll help you get your brand out there, because as you interview people and then they share that interview with their audience, their crowd, you use them to help market your podcast. And I think that is very valuable, particularly for folks that might not already have a platform and they're starting a podcast from scratch. So that would be my recommendation. If you can, and if it's at all possible, incorporate, you know, interviews into your show.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I think that's great advice. And we certainly do that here. And that's just a big part of our show is connecting with other podcasters like yourselves and hearing some of the great stuff like we've heard today. But selfishly for me, it's a great chance for me to meet other people and kind of stay up to date with the best and the latest that people are doing who are leading the field. So I think it connecting with people in your area through interviews checks a lot of the boxes that you need for a successful venture of any type, podcast,
Absolutely.
Personal brand, coaching, business, you know, product, whatever it is. So awesome. Rob, I love it. Thank you very much for coming on the show today. For folks who want to connect with you, can you share where they can find out more about you and your podcast?
Yeah, I mean, just go to doughroller.net and you'll see a link to the podcast in the navigation. And they're welcome to join. If they're interested in personal finance and investing, I would recommend they join the Facebook group. And you can just go to doughroller.net/Facebook group. There's 2,200 people in there now helping each other, trying to figure out money, investing, everything. You know, it's a remarkable group of people that's just exceeded my expectations by a mile. And so those would be the two that I'd recommend.
Awesome. Awesome. Rob Berger, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Craig. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Podcast Motor Show. If you're enjoying the show, head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. I'd love to hear what you think. And as always, head on over to podcastmotor.com for more great resources on how you can become a better podcaster. We'll see you next time.